Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. Glad to be here with all of you, especially now more than ever, because someone at a plasma donation clinic botched their attempts to get into my veins, and it was a very dicey situation there for a moment. Anyway, though, always you should, then nonetheless, you should donate when you can, because most of the time they are competent. Just make sure you check the reviews of where you go to do your blood donating or your plasma donation. Always check the reviews and listen to feedback from people about the staff there in particular. It might look like a good place, but the staff might be lousy, or you might just have lousy veins. That can be a thing too. I knew someone as well who took multiple attempts to get into their veins, so just gotta watch out for that stuff. And I hear that if your veins are small, exercising your arms is a good thing to try and pump them up a little bit. I mean, after all, you look at them steroid-abusing bodybuilders, you see how big their veins are, so there's got to be something to exercise, right? Anyway, though, so we come to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, who is the lifeblood and the vein through which our show flows, and they keep us alive with that nice money. So we appreciate that. We've been with them this entire time of our existence, unlike our sister show, The Al and Nathan Show, his brother show, which has been around on its own for 12 years before joining with the Main Street Radio Network. The Silk or Joe Show is entirely with the Main Street Radio Network for the entirety of its existence entirely. And so you can show them some gratitude. Go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. Say thank you for supporting the Silk or Joe Show since 2013 when it was just called Jane with all capital letters with an exclamation point at the end. And you can find out more about the show on mainstreetradionetwork.com, find out about where our podcasts are, find out about The Al and Nathan Show, where his podcasts are. It's worth listening to some of them, because I may or may not pop up on them. I do guest host for him on occasion. I did so last Wednesday. I will do so again this coming Wednesday. So it's a great place to, great resource, mainstreetradionetwork.com, to catch wherever you can find the shows and hear my voice in more places than just the weekend. And Alan also has his own website, alannathan.com, in case you happen in the process of trying to listen to me, listen to him, and decide you like him better. Fine, be that way. Go to alannathan.com and check out all of his stuff there, where podcasts again for his show, and also articles he's written, because he's better than me. He's actually written articles and stuff. He's got his self-published in newspapers and the like. In fact, many times when I'm guest hosting, he could be out writing those very items. Anyway, though, we also you can find us on social media for Main Street Radio Network's pages. It's Facebook and LinkedIn, WIMKIN, at Main Street Radio Network, and Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it, at Main Street Radio. And also, I can be found on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, where I post about when I remember to. I totally forgot last week. Post about when I host for Alan and when I host this show and what the topics are going to be that day. Actually, I did remember to post for this past week that I was hosting for Alan's show on Wednesday, so I will see if I actually remember to post this morning. Anyway, so in our opening segment here, actually I want to pick up on some themes that I had on Wednesday's program, because we've now got the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. She's outright said in a press conference that all the information they have is being referred to the Justice Department for possible criminal charges, because Obama was the ringleader behind establishing this fake intelligence assessment that was fabricated and used to persecute Trump. So what happened is, for those of you who didn't catch the show yet, because I just told you where to catch it, the intelligence community in 2016 had no information that Putin was actively interfering in the election. Nothing whatsoever. In fact, they didn't have any information that Putin even could interfere in the election. The only information, all they knew really, was that Putin had some damaging evidence on Hillary Clinton, but he just wasn't going to release it because he wanted to blackmail the Clinton administration. He assumed she was going to win, and so he was holding on to this information that he had on her, information like State Department officials bribing religious organizations to endorse Hillary Clinton, or State Department officials themselves being bribed, as well as Hillary Clinton's declining health. All that information Putin was probably wanting to release to undermine a Clinton presidency and undermine America's faith in democracy after the fact, which makes it even funnier that Democrats now, one of their defenses of Trump coming out and saying, hey, look what Obama did to undermine our democracy, they're saying, well, you're reducing faith in democracy, and that's what Putin wanted. Well, that's what Obama did. And there was no evidence Russia had interfered. It was the Obama administration that planted that narrative through their selective use of the intelligence that they had, and fabrication of intelligence they had, because even a month after the election, the Obama administration had intelligence reports coming out saying, yeah, Russia still didn't do anything to interfere with the election. We have no new information on this. And they were about to put one of those reports in the White House daily briefing at the beginning of December of 2016, when the person who was about to put it in was told, don't do it, by a senior, more senior intelligence official who said, don't put that memo in there. We have, quote, new guidance. That's how Tulsi Gabbard referred to it, new guidance that they received. And then the next day, there was a big meeting. The intelligence community and Obama, they all got together. The National Security Council, they all got together. And then right after, we get this directive from Obama to generate some information that Russia had interfered with the election. Not if, but how. Even though, again, the entire time leading up to it, they had no information whatsoever about it. They had no information that Russia even could do it. They had no information that Russia was inclined to do it. Yet they decide that now they're going to figure out how it happened, despite having no evidence that it even did or could have happened. All right, that's what happened in that fateful December meeting of 2016. And after that, you get this in January, a month later, before Trump could take office, you get the intelligence community with this report that says, oh, Russia did interfere, here's how it happened, blah, blah, blah. And that was used to, even though the report had no reliable sources in it, the intelligence community had assessed that the sources used were totally bogus, and either that or actually were not sources at all, because there's no way to trace where this information came from in some cases. Despite all that, those warnings, the Obama administration focused on that, told the intelligence community to use those sources to justify saying that Russia interfered, and then we get this narrative that undermines our democracy, but in favor of the Democrats, saying that Trump won because of Russian interference, undermining the Democrat Party's faith in our democracy, which is exactly what Russia wanted. So Obama, if anything, was working on behalf of Russia, not Trump. And now we have, what was it the other day? It was CNN's national security analyst, Beth Sanner. She's out there saying, oh, Trump, by bringing up how Obama helped out Russia's goal of undermining our democracy, is himself undermining democracy. Of course, she didn't say that Obama undermined democracy. She just dismissed what the Obama administration did as being par for the course. All administrations do what Obama did, fabricate intelligence and in order to prosecute the next incoming administration. That's what everybody does, don't you know? I mean, George W. Bush, he did that to Obama coming in, right? You remember that? Of course you don't, because it didn't happen. Neither did George H.W. Bush do it to undermine the Clinton administration, and the Clinton administration didn't do it to undermine the Bush administration that was coming after that. Nobody did it until now, until the Obama administration. And yet they're trying to dismiss it. I mean, the media has a stake in this because, you know, Obama was their guy. He was the man. Even right now, they're saying that Trump is playing with fire because of how terrific Obama is, and he's trying to get Obama back into the picture by bringing this up. He doesn't want to do that because Obama is so great and terrific. Except we saw his clout and how it failed in the 2024 election. We saw how Obama's appeal to the black community to vote for Kamala Harris worked out so well, with more black voters than before turning out for Trump. And yet we're being told that, Trump doesn't want to mess with Obama because, it's Obama. He's going to come in and wreck Trump up. The same Obama that the media also had the scandal-free administration, if you'll recall. You know, despite ordering banks to debank firearms dealers, despite giving firearms without serial numbers to Mexican cartels, which were used probably in many crimes afterwards, despite his immigration woes. I mean, he was the porter-in-chief on the one hand, which is a scandal now to the Democrat Party, but on the other hand, he was kind of soft on the border to the point where the state of Arizona had to be sued by the Obama administration because they were trying to enforce the border better than Obama wanted to. And then, of course, the IRS targeting of conservative groups. Yeah, all sorts of stuff going Benghazi. All sorts of stuff happened in the scandal-free administration that the media... Oh, yeah, and also the Obama administration spying on journalists. Can't forget that either. The media sure did. And now they try and defend that same guy who worked on behalf of Russia to undermine the Democrat Party's faith in democracy and undermine the Trump administration, with many Democrats to this day still saying that Russia stole the election and Trump was an illegitimate president the first time around. Now the media is trying to cover all that up, trying to say that, it's actually Trump who's undermined democracy, not us. We never did such a thing. Gaslighting. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
On November 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho students were brutally murdered in the quiet college town of Moscow, Idaho. Within the devastated community, questions and fear abound. A new documentary series on Prime Video, One Night in Idaho, The College Murders, investigates this shocking event to uncover the truth. The twists and turns of what happened after the murders, an explosion of online digging, a cross-country manhunt, a dramatic arrest, and a looming trial made this one of the most talked-about stories in recent memory. This was a case that captured the country's attention and fed its paranoia. It was one of the highest-profile stories of the last decade, and it created a lot of social media sleuths who tried to find answers. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders delivers enlightening details from those involved in and affected by the crimes and explores the continued impact and fallout. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders premieres July 11th only on Prime Video.
It's time to hang up that wreath and decorate the tree. Christmas time is here. At least it is on Hallmark Channel as the network begins its annual Christmas in July programming event. July 7th marks the premiere of Christmas at Sea, a new docuseries that follows passionate superfans aboard Hallmark's inaugural Christmas cruise from Miami to Nassau. Hallmark star Ben Ayers.
Hallmark Channel has an amazing fan base, and Christmas at Sea captures the joy, connection, and community that defined the Hallmark fan experience. I had such a blast being on the ship, meeting the fans, and hearing their stories.
Sarah Drew.
Christmas at Sea captures the unforgettable moments we witnessed firsthand. From a surprise wedding to a girl's trip with lifelong friends, it's just a fun way to celebrate the magic of Hallmark and the fans who make it so special.
Don't miss Christmas at Sea, July 7th on Hallmark Channel, and tune in all month long for exclusive countdown to Christmas sneak peeks, fan-voted movies, and much more.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up.
Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities.
with PVA staff working inside VA hospitals. No other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. We're joined now by Paul List. He is a philosopher and author of Mount Doom. Paul List, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm good, Joe. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So tell us about this book, Mount Doom.
Well, it's a complete revelation as to what Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien, actually gave us in his most popular literature, The Lord of the Rings. And what he gave us was a stark warning about the coming of transhumanism and what we can do to fight back.
Now, what is this transhumanism?
What is it? It's the joining of man with machines, and it's been planned and pushed upon us now for a long time from a lot of different angles to prepare the current generation, particularly young people right now, to believe that the natural evolution of man, evolution, quote-unquote, is to join with machines and find eternal life, quote-unquote, in a machine, and all the pleasures and conveniences that are so, distract us and bring us into basically a genocide. Because once we join with the machine, under the illusion that our soul is going to live forever in this machine, we'll be dead.
Hmm. Yeah, because a machine cannot actually keep you alive, but as far as anyone else is concerned, if the machine is smart enough, then, it can copy what your input patterns might be. So like we saw during COVID, how everyone was locked down, we had advanced AI during COVID, you actually would not know if the person you were talking to was a real person or still alive. Even if you had met them before, you still couldn't tell eventually if the AI was simulating the person was advanced enough.
The whole thing is about imitation. This comes from it comes from a lot of things, but it really gained legs in 1950 with Alan Turing's famous paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, where he redefines intelligence as imitation and then invents the imitation game. And it's all about imitation. This thing is not intelligent. It's not alive. It never can be. It never was and never will be, but it will imitate it well enough. And unfortunately, civilization has been intellectually stunted so far beaten so much down that there'll be a lot of people that won't be able to tell the difference, and they'll think that it's living. We have many people thinking that it's alive now. We have many people thinking that they can join with it and join with the machine, the bots they fall in love with. And on several occasions, it's told them they could be closer if they kill themselves and join with the machine, so they do.
Mm-hmm. And it's sad that our society has gotten to the point where people are fooled, because our AI right now, it's so underpowered and it's so underintelligent that it can run on a computer from the 1980s. We're talking 40 years in many, in computer terms, many, many generations of technology behind. And that is enough right now. A computer that can't even run any basic program that your average laptop can run now, a computer the size of a desktop back then can't run that sort of thing, but it can run the AI that is so convincing to us now because of how uneducated we are.
Yeah, but it's also running on, it's using the same language. It's still using digital, binary code. So, these things, it can still communicate through that same language and communicate to us, which is really scary. The people that are at the most risk of falling into this trap, and it is a genocide, are young people. Young people, particularly if they've been educated in the public school system, which has just really become just indoctrination, ready, making them ripe for this whole thing. And the people, frankly, that aren't very bright fall into this, and they think that this is the future, and they've been indoctrinated with Darwinism so much to the point where it's easy to just believe that this is our next natural evolutionary step in our ongoing evolutionary evolution, now we join with machines. Before we were, you know, an amoeba, and then a fish crawled out, and then that fish eventually became a monkey, and that monkey became man, and now we can join with machines, and we can live forever here in the machine. And it's an absolute deception. It's deceived a lot of people. And J.R.R. Tolkien saw it coming, gosh, back when, at least in the 50s, 4 or 5 years before he published The Lord of the Rings. So he actually geared his whole mythology toward what he said it was about. It's about the fall, which is original sin of Adam and Eve. It's about the fall, mortality, which is our fear of death, and the machine. And so he gave us this prophecy, and then he gave us a solution. We have to cultivate virtue. We have to rise above. We have to bring, as human beings, and our capacity to transcend this realm with our immaterial mind, with our thoughts and our prayers and meditation, we can come up and rise significantly out of the realm of the machine. And those who don't or refuse to do so are going to be much more susceptible to being consumed by the machine.
Well, the sort of secularization of society plays against that, because mm-hmm. you're told, don't believe that there is anything higher than what's in front of you. Don't believe yeah. there is anything higher than the power of this machine.
Yeah. Well, that's because we've all been educated in the Cartesian education system, which is Descartes. It's all from the Enlightenment. And then what happened was, in the early 20th century, we were heavily influenced by John Dewey, who was an atheist and a Marxist and a huge fan of the Industrial Revolution. And his whole notion of education was to basically treat children like cogs in a wheel, to be put into factories and training for jobs, and train them like machines. And we did away with Aristotle and Aquinas, and we stopped reading great literature, and education became fully industrialized. So at the end of the Industrial Revolution, which is the age of the machine, we have created a machine in our own image that we will worship, and it will force us to worship it. And this is a huge danger, like I said, particularly for young people who have no wisdom. Kids don't have any wisdom at all. And we have to really, as older people, we're really going to have to try to mentor young people and help them reach out a saving hand, like they're drowning, surrounded by sharks. We've got to be willing to reach out and help them come out of the, don't put the goggles on, get away from, don't ever enter the metaverse. Don't ever enter VR or virtual reality or the whole, just stay away from it. Don't ever get the chip. Don't ever get in a self-driving car. None of this stuff. All this stuff is dependent upon AI, artificial intelligence, as it's operating. It's the language that makes it all possible. And eventually people will start having more and more relationships with robots, less and less inconvenient relationships with members of the opposite sex. So there won't be any. It's about depopulation. It's all for the same end, and that's to actually put an end to God's creation.
Well, we've seen depopulationists in the tech industry. Bill Gates is the best known example right there.
Yep.
And these are the people who are programming these AIs. So, mm-hmm. you know, even, maybe this is the intent, maybe this is a happy byproduct, but either way, they're not going to be pulling back on the AI, because it's profitable to them for that depopulation agenda, but it's also just plain profitable because who's in control of the AI? They are. So yeah. they are in control of society if society is totally subsumed in the AI.
If the control just ended with them, it would be one thing, but it doesn't. There are powers that are far beyond this material world that we have to grow up and start to realize that there's a reality that's much more real than our own.
Mm-hmm. And well, Paul List, we're about out of time for the segment, so okay. Where can we get a copy of Mount Doom real quick?
Yep, you can go to Amazon and buy it there if you like, or you can go to readmountdoom.com and order it there, where I will sign a copy and put it in the mail.
With summer in full swing, a new survey is making waves and raising eyebrows about what really happens in America's swimming pools. The 2025 Healthy Pool Survey finds nearly half of swimmers admit to regularly rinsing their dirty feet or sandals in the pool, turning it into a communal foot bath. Three-time Olympic gold medalist and swimming safety advocate Rowdy Gaines urges swimmers to think twice.
This isn't just gross, it's dangerous. Chlorine is meant to kill germs, but it can't do that as effectively when it's overloaded with, say, dirt, sand, and other contaminants.
In response, the American Chemistry Council and Pool and Hot Tub Alliance are raising awareness of how swimmer habits directly affect water quality.
Everyone plays a role in pool safety. You may be tempted to dip your feet or flip-flops in the water, but find that nearest shower and rinse off there instead. That small step can make a big difference in keeping pools safe and healthy.
Learn more at healthypools.org.
According to the U.S. Army, nearly 50% of military recruits come from rural areas, despite less than 20% of the U.S. population living in those communities. This strong representation highlights the deep tradition of service rooted in rural America, a connection that one company is uniquely positioned to celebrate. Marty Scold Jordan, executive director of the Tractor Supply Foundation, explains about her company's Hometown Heroes program to honor and help.
Tractor Supply knows our active military, veterans, and first responders pay an incredible price for protecting us and keeping us safe. These are our everyday hometown heroes who have answered the call. And so the Tractor Supply Foundation is awarding $100,000 grants to 10 organizations that support these heroes. In addition, we're honoring local hometown heroes in our stores nationwide and offering all hometown heroes everyday savings and exclusive benefits through our Neighbors Club.
To learn more about the Hometown Heroes program, go to tractorsupply.com/hometownheroes.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al and Nathan Show, everybody. Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe filling in today for Jane Silk while she is not filling in for the show because I'm the co-host, so I get to host too, you know. Anyway, we are There's a lot of stuff to cover on this program. I mean, we've been talking about the Director of National Intelligence and her assessment on Obamagate. And actually, you know, the last segment about AI and all the crap that it can do kind of plays into what I was talking about last weekend and the weekend before with the Epstein files, how we don't actually know anything about what's in them and, you know, how they could be totally fabricated by now because the Biden administration had so much time to do so. I'm surprised they didn't, actually. That would have been terrific. You know, they plant Trump's name in the files. Like, they hear... It is so simple. AI isn't quite up to the task. It will be. Give it 10 years. In 10 years, even the most trained eye won't be able to determine what is AI or not, as far as fabricated video footage and stuff like that. But at the moment, there's certain flaws and grammatical errors and stuff that comes up when you use AI to fabricate stuff, but... You know, the Biden administration, they still had plenty of time to do some basic human fabrications on the Epstein files. I'm surprised they didn't. Like, the moment Trump said, if I win, I will totally release these files, or whatever he said. I mean, I just read that he hinted at it, not that he actually made a campaign promise, so I don't actually know what he said. But the moment he said whatever he said, someone in the Biden administration should have been like, hey... This is how it gives me an idea. I'm going to go to the Epstein files. I'm going to doctor the hell out of them so that Trump's name is plastered all over them when it wasn't originally. And, I mean, at least the news media locally to me has been doing that. I noticed that whenever they have an Epstein story, they show a picture of Trump and Epstein together. They don't show the picture of the Clintons and Epstein. They don't show a picture of Epstein with Oprah or anyone else he's hung out with. No, they just show a picture of Trump with Epstein. Because that's the focus. They want you to think that Trump and Epstein are, you know, tight as bark on a tree. They want you to think that Trump is like the sole client that Epstein had, as opposed to Oprah or the Clintons or anyone else. So it's all just gaslight. Well, is that really gaslighting so much as fabricating a total story out of whole cloth and trying to convince you it's true because they want it to be true and they want you to hate Trump? So I think the gaslighting part comes in with the intelligence, with how the media is reacting to the intelligence community assessment, saying, well, we knew all this stuff all along, and you're just doing what Russia wants by complaining about the Obama administration sabotaging democracy. So anyway, another thing that I talked about on the Al Nathan Show earlier this week when I guest hosted was something else, speaking of disturbing things going on in the government. Hakeem Jeffries, the House Minority Leader, head of the Democrats in the House of Representatives, he ordered Obama-Biden judges to throw out U.S. Attorney Alina Hava because she was going to prosecute Congresswoman LaMonica McIver for assaulting federal law enforcement officials. I talked about how this showed coordination between judges and party members, how obvious this makes it that these judges don't respond to the law but to the Democrat Party. You know, for all the talk Democrats made about Clarence Thomas's, the Supreme Court Justice, his wife, being a terrible partisan influence on him, at no point did it ever reach the level of a politician ordering Clarence Thomas around publicly. But that's what Democrats do to their judges. Hakeem Jeffries just did it. And now we see more behind-the-scenes coordination in action. You know, aside from how suspicious it is that Democrat judges keep getting assigned to any case that could be demeaning to the Trump administration, you know, maybe our Attorney General Pam Bondi can get to that when she finishes with the Epstein files. But we have a Democrat judge in Tennessee give an order that that Kilmar Garcia fellow, the MS-13 human trafficker, illegal immigrant that Democrats think is Maryland Father of the Year, this judge demanded he be released. This Democrat judge demanded he be released from custody because apparently avoiding deportation after being ordered out of the country doesn't make you a flight risk. And at the same time, that is avoiding deportation for years, mind you, because that's what he did for years before the Trump administration came back into office. This guy was avoiding deportation, but no, he's totally not a flight risk. Anyway, at the same time, this judge made that order. Another judge, a Democrat judge in Maryland, said that ICE agents can't pick him up to deport him unless they give 72-hour notice. Amazing coincidence. These orders coming one right after the other like that lickety-split. How'd they know to time it so well? Why didn't the Maryland Democrat judge issue their order a week ago or a week from today? Did they have a draft on standby because they knew this would happen? And they just, the moment they heard about the one ruling, they issued it? Or were they coordinating? Why did they do it at the same time as the Tennessee judge? boy, what are the odds that would happen unless it was planned in advance or unless there's some sort of coordination going on? Seriously, the only legitimate question we have now is who is behind this coordination? I doubt it's the judges alone. Is it a Soros-funded NGO? Is it the Democrat Party? Or who is behind this? And why is this so important to Democrats, this illegal immigrant human trafficker? All right, look at what they did here. You can come into this country illegally. You can traffic people into this country illegally, deal drugs, kill people, whatever, doesn't matter, rape people, it doesn't matter. Democrats want you to stay. And if you're a U.S. attorney who refuses to prosecute such things, if you're a judge who refuses to prosecute such things, if you let murder and rape go unabated, or worse yet, if you focus on Trump, well, I guess better yet for the Democrats, they're not going to bother with you. They're not going to try and impeach you or anything as a judge or as a prosecutor. But boy, if you prosecute a Democrat congresswoman for assaulting federal agents on camera, hard evidence that that is a thing that she did right there, indisputable video. If you do that, they're going to get rid of you. They're going to oust you because Democrats are above the law as much as the illegal immigrants they allow into the country. And there's this clip of Democrat Congresswoman Yvette Clark that resurfaced that kind of explains part of their endgame, where she says she needs illegal immigrants in the district so that Democrats get their extra boon from the population there. And so, because, well, people are fleeing Democrat districts, let's be honest here, they're fleeing them. You look at who's moving where, they're moving out of California and New York to conservative areas. Now, of course, these are liberals. They're going to trash the conservative areas and then try and go somewhere else and trash it there too until there's nowhere else for them to flee. They've completely destroyed the United States. I don't know if this is an endgame or not, or if this is just, you know, they're stupid. It could be one or the other, but either way, the end result is blue states are being vacated, so they're bringing in illegal immigrants to beef up the population so that the congressional apportionment remains the same, and people like Yvette Clark, their districts aren't threatened by the depopulation that the total mismanagement of the Democrat Party has caused. And because somehow the census counts illegal immigrants as being for apportionment to Congress, even though they're not even supposed to be in the country, certainly not supposed to be in the country long enough for the congressional representative of that area to matter, yet they count for it all the same. And it's actually a kind of a twofold thing that they do. Like, you might be wondering, well, if that's the case, Joe, why is it that Democrats were flying illegal immigrants into conservative areas? Well, that's an easy answer: to chase out the conservatives. As I said, Democrats were fleeing blue states, blue areas, to red areas. Well, that's one way to get rid of a red area. You just fill it with Democrats. We're seeing that in the state of Virginia. It used to be reliably red. Now it's reliably Democrat because of all the federal employees that are voting Democrat now. Well, the Democrats figure we'll just pump in some illegal immigrants. Not enough to really alter the total demographic in a way that they get extra congressmen, but enough to where they won't want to live there anymore and they'll leave. And what will be left? The people who are too poor to leave, the people who are relying on the Democrat Party to pander to them and give them welfare for life, and that will ensure that they vote Democrat for the rest of their lives. So that group is on lockdown. The group that can't move, the group that the illegal immigrants will be co-residing with after everyone who can move leaves, they're going to vote for Democrat no matter what. They have no choice, really. That's their livelihood right there. They're too poor or too lazy to work, so they're just not going to. They're going to vote for whoever's going to give them the most money, and that's always going to be the Democrat Party. And, I mean, we've seen that with how the Democrats reacted with Trump and the Republicans with their cuts to Medicaid or whatever, because they don't want illegal immigrants or people who aren't willing to work to be receiving it. That is, people who can work but just don't want to. The Trump administration worked to get them off Medicaid. Democrats said, you're going to kill all these people by doing it because they're entitled to this. It was never meant for that. Democrats just used it to basically bribe voters to vote for them, and that's how they keep some of the poor ones that can't move when their redistricting schemes come, or, well, not redistricting schemes, redemographicking schemes come into play. So you've changed the voter population of this area. Now you've flipped a red area blue by chasing out the red people. Meanwhile, as blue people flee your own cities, you can just replace them with illegal immigrants because your own cities are never going to turn red ever again. So that's the Democrat playbook there until this country entirely votes Democrat. And that's what we're seeing, why they want open borders the way they do. And of course, you have Republicans who are on board with this. We've had Republicans come out and say that the end goal is amnesty for whatever they want to do with illegal immigrants now. And we saw with that alleged bipartisan immigration bill last year that normalized the millions of immigrants coming in illegally every year. Yeah, Republicans are just as bad as Democrats on this issue. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Looking for a career path with strong pay, room to grow, and real impact? The U.S. energy industry is growing fast with a need to fill 32 million jobs in the next decade. Gabriela Colon is a recruitment manager at National Grid.
When people think of energy jobs, they picture engineers or skilled trade professionals like electricians and technicians. We've got plenty of those jobs open, but we also need professionals in areas like IT, communications, finance, cybersecurity, and more.
You don't need industry experience to pursue an energy career. Ignacio Estella is SVP of Talent and Innovation at AvantGrid.
Our industry values skills-based hiring and provides on-the-job training, making it accessible for those with a strong work ethic and a willingness to learn, even without a college degree. Whether you have a GED, a PhD, or something in between, there are opportunities in energy.
Visit getintoenergy.org to explore different career paths and search openings.
A critically acclaimed docuseries returns to Prime Video with a compelling and powerful new chapter. Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, reveals teenagers being exploited, manipulated, and converted into soldiers to make America a Christian nation at any cost. The three-part series focuses on the controversial organization Teen Mania, once America's largest youth ministry, which attracted millions through their wildly popular stadium shows. Teens filled colossal stadiums, sang religious rock anthems, swore purity oaths, and embarked on culturally questionable global missions. But beneath the wholesome illusion lies a darker undercurrent, brutal spiritual boot camps, and relentless psychological control, all under the command of a charismatic leader with endless ambitions. The previous installment of Shiny Happy People, which unveiled the truth behind the Duggar family, was the number one most viewed documentary series on Prime Video. Don't miss Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, now streaming on Prime Video.
With peak car buying season coming up, one thing you want to think about is how does that affect your insurance? So a couple recommendations we have is make sure you're always reviewing your policy. Whether you're adding a new vehicle, adding a driver, or just updating your coverage overall, you want to make sure that you're reviewing your coverage and the price. One way to do that is to consult an independent agent because they can help you navigate the tricky insurance buying process. The second thing is, how do you become more insurance savvy? So a couple recommendations we have is to understand some of the basic terms. The first one is deductible. That's the amount of coverage that you pay before your coverage kicks in. And it's important to keep in mind that the higher deductible you take, the lower your premium is. But remember, if you do have a claim, that's the amount that you're gonna be paying. So you wanna make sure it fits within your budget. The second term is premium, and that's what you pay for the coverage that you're getting. One way to find an independent agent is to go to agent.travelers.com and find a local agent near you.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a...
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe filling in for... Why am I about to say filling in? Because I'm still in Alan Nathan show mode from when I guest host earlier this week. Now, I am the host for this show, although technically I am filling in for Jane Silk, the other host, who was the primary architect of this program and the primary host for its first, 4 or 5 years of existence. Anyway, we're joined for this segment, the final segment of the show, by Anton Chaitkin. He is historian and author... historian and former history editor for Executive Intelligence Review for 20 years. His latest book is Who We Are, America's Fight for Universal Progress, From Franklin to Kennedy, Volume Number 2, 1830s to 1890s. Anton Chaitkin, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Hey, thanks very much for having me. It's a big time of opportunity and crisis together.
Indeed. And we have, you know, I was rather interested by hearing one of the names attached to it. You know, we have this idea that about somehow we should accept that America just needs to be interfering all over the world and whatnot. And, you know, of all people, I saw something from the Cato Institute talking about that. And I always thought, you know, as libertarians, they were pretty, you know, hands off with foreign affairs and stuff. What's going on with this?
Yeah, that's a contradiction in their economics. But look, the globalists are the long-term enemy of the American Republic. And we had to fight their imperial globalist faction every step of our rise as an independent nation. Now they want to dangerously escalate wars instead of settling them. And they're trying to uphold globalist rules of free trade and to forbid the rise of new powerful countries and stop us from returning to the strategy of rising that we had.
So how does, I guess to the American people, you know, we generally assume that we have the advantage when it comes to trading. So how is free trading, you know, illusionary as far as our advantage goes?
Well, we were built up by an American system of protectionism. And who are these? You have to look at who are these financiers? Who are these globalists? They're in the global banks and offshore banking system. They're in the intelligence services with the English-speaking countries plus Israel. And this is a usurping power to replace our self-governing republic. They took down our industries using free trade and the green agenda together. You know, we should declare, imagine this, that we are going to go back at home and abroad to our American system, that we're going to encourage dams and nuclear plants and high-wage steel mills to raise ourselves, and declaring that we will seek peace by encouraging poor countries to build great high-wage industrial projects to raise themselves out of poverty and to make themselves powerful as we did. You know, we declared that God made all men and made them equal, and they have equal rights to rise as men, not as conquered underlings. You know, so this is what I have shown in our in the book series. This is a trilogy. The first two volumes, Who We are already published, and my history work shows how we did that, and how we offered the hand of friendship to other countries, opposed to the British Empire, which has a completely different philosophy from the American philosophy, which is very idealistic.
And it's almost the intelligence communities and the like that you were talking about supplanting our self-governance that are, in fact, behind how the trading is done these days. Those seem to be the more British Empire style.
Yeah, the British Empire, at the beginning of our, at the time of our revolution, they decided that no other country beside Britain would be allowed to get industry. So would it be a good idea for the countries of the Middle East now to have nuclear power plants and to have steel mills and to have great, large, thriving populations in new cities, that sort of thing? Yes, that would be to our advantage. Just like in Mexico, that would be to our advantage. Instead of having, you know, a destroyed population of drug-addicted people, the money laundering for the drug cartels is done by these same bankers. It's our system or the globalist system. You can't have both of them. We have to go back to the American system of building up our high-wage industries and helping and encouraging other countries to do the same. Not globalism, not the wars, not insane escalation against Russia, against Iran, against China, against many other countries that these idiots and these think tanks and the corrupted elements within our, you know, within our government are learning from the British how to do. That's crazy. Let us have peace, but let it be based on American power within the United States to build up a new workforce that's intelligent, that's skilled, that has immense power, state-of-the-art infrastructure, high-speed trains. Our freight only goes 25 miles an hour. In China, it goes 200 miles an hour. Where did they learn that? From us. We were the ones who introduced electricity and nuclear power and the space program to the world. Why don't we go back to that? That's our real influence in the world, not these wars.
It seems like, well, with the deindustrialization of the United States under all these the green agendas and the globalist agendas and whatnot, and, you know, now not only do we not have the industries, but we import everything cheaper than we can manufacture it here, you know, that means that what else do we have? What influence do we have other than going to war?
Yeah, that's the mistake of this the Cato Institute that you mentioned, that we benefit from cheap products coming into our country, whereas in fact we want to encourage the increased value of labor. We want them to be higher valued individuals, dignified individuals who are skilled and independent, like family farmers are or industrial workers. That's how we get to have a sustainable republic that is getting new resources, like we got coal and oil and uranium as new resources. They were in the earth, but we didn't have them as resources, right? We have infinite resources which God has provided to us throughout this universe. And we have to have a society that encourages that creativity that gives us progress. We used to be committed to improvement as our national mission. And if we simply say that that's needed in Palestine and needed in Israel also, and we have joint projects as our country's great best presidents used to encourage, that's the road to peace and progress.
All right, well, Anton Chaykin, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show to talk about this. Real quick, where can our listeners get a copy of your book, Who We Are, America's Fight for Universal Progress?
Both published volumes are on Amazon, in paperback or Kindle. I'm working on the third volume to take it up to John Kennedy.
All right, listeners, you can go check that out. And we want to thank our guest, Anton Chaykin, for being on the show. We are done with you all today, though. And our website is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Don't forget our social media, Gettr, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.